Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, and good afternoon, Jen.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I have some announcements here to kick us off.
Okay, great.
Recording and listening is a simple and powerful tool that assists us in accessing the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature and live the life we want. Our 5-week class, which begins March 13th, includes recording and listening exercises and time in class to process your experience. Sangha is once again invited to deepen practice at our spiritual home at 4-Acre Zen Center in gorgeous Scrim, Washington. This year's Summer of Sangha includes week-long and weekend retreats from June 14 to August 18. A full schedule of yoga, meditation, guidance, workshops, groups, and self-guided practice will be offered. Registration is limited, so sign up soon.
And I will tell you, Michael, that beautiful Scrim is definitely living up to its reputation today on this winter day. Yeah, beautiful sunshine. I mean, yeah. Oh, come see ya. It's gorgeous.
Good, I will. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Jen, please press *6 and then 1 to make guest show. And a conversation on one topic, please. And about 5 minutes is great. Okay, Jen, I think we're ready to roll here.
Okay, great.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Ramita in South Carolina.
Hey, Ramita.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Jen. I am in so many of us in Sangha are doing the email class. I'm doing that, and my mother died last week, so I'm experiencing the grief process. Yeah.
Mm. Go ahead.
It's surprising to me how very physical this process is.
Mm.
You know, conditioning would say it should be emotional. It should be displaying sadness, and what I feel is this incredible heaviness in the body, that's the dominant experience. It's
right there, Ramita, that seems like such a beautiful way that I would project your practice as supporting you right now, in the sense of you get to just be with however it is. So it's, you know, who would have known that was the main way, as you say, you know, we think, oh, it's going to be an emotional experience. And the predominant experience you're having right now with it is one that's physical and feeling a real heaviness with that. And so the training to be able to be with that.
Yes. I was a friend I ran into yesterday expressed condolences and said this can be a really hard time. And I understand what she was saying. But what my experience is that it's also very soft. Because there's this willingness to yield and allow. So the resistance is softening. So it's there are waves of sensation that are coming through, and along come memories and thoughts. But again, the attention is drawn to the body and how it's how these sensations are playing out.
Yeah. And again, what a beautiful description that there's a softness with it, and really just the waves of what's coming through with it and being willing to, I think you said, yield to that, to really let that be the experience that it is. Because, you know, it just, that experience of losing someone that's so, you know, such a huge part of your life and has been literally your entire life, and to experience that person transitioning, what an opportunity to just be in the mystery of it.
Yeah, that's it. It's like a mystery school like I've never experienced. And, you know, a pet I've had for 14 years died right after Christmas. And it was a sudden thing because he was healthy and happy and vital, and then he was dead. You know, it wasn't an injury. He just no longer vitality embodying. There's no more energy there. And the impact, it started then to recognize, wow, it's like these cells in this body are reacting to how very fragile and unknown this process is. And that came in like a woof. And that's continued so that the energy work that I do with Qigong and things like that, watching this this process of the heaviness, the cramping, the tension that comes and goes throughout the body, and then bringing attention into the moment, working with the tools that I have from awareness practice, watching the resistance go down, the energy move through, and a whole different sense of presence.
So in other words, if I'm tracking with you, that the Qigong, your awareness practice, these tools that you have allow you to not be in the resistance that might be there to all of it, but rather to just have it all move through in whatever way it's moving through and to be with it.
And to see how conditioned mind would easily, if I'm not paying attention, solidify around a certain sensation and turn that into a story and perpetuate itself. And by coming back to presence, softening, and letting that move through, the suffering has been diminished tremendously.
Yeah, that is so it, Ramita, especially with something, you know, that we have such clear cultural ideas about and beliefs, you know, grief, someone dying. You know, first of all, starting with the basic assumption that dying is bad. we don't want to die. We have to avoid death at all costs. And all these ideas about how that's going to be when that happens and how I'm supposed to be. You know, people talk about things like either, God, I'm way too emotional about this, or I'm not emotional enough about this, or, you know, sort of all these cultural ideas that are around that. And being able to let that go and to just have the experience that you're having is what a tremendous opportunity and gift.
Yeah, and recognizing I'm the oldest of four kids and all of my siblings are alive and are partners, you know, to recognize that, have such a clear example of how this practitioner's, my awareness practice, is allowing them the possibility of also seeing that there's nothing wrong and having their own experience and without having to say a word.
Exactly. Well, that's so it. Because I would project they just sense it. You know, when you're around authenticity in whatever form that's taking, people can sense it. And so, yes, just without you saying anything, there's just that possibility of being present with what is. They're seeing that opportunity for themselves.
Please.
I was just going to say, hopefully, and I project this into the kind of the way you're describing it, that softness and the heaviness that's there, that it's a reminder, it's an opportunity to take really good care of ourselves through something like this, you know, to recognize that we're probably going to feel the whole spectrum of what it's possible to feel as we go through something like this. And so just really giving ourselves that extra space to let it be however it is.
Yeah, yeah, there's been more pauses in the day, and it feels mm-hmm. like almost like that gravity is pulling me in and down, grounding mm-hmm. me and mm-hmm. you know, reminding me, just be here, just breathe, mm-hmm. just
yeah.
here. And there's nothing that has to be done. And it's a relief, and it's a relief and an opening at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a good time, I'm sure you're using recording and listening, but it just strikes me that it's a good time to record in the sense of it really gives us perspective and reminds us of what's really important. And then to be able to carry that process forward, you know, into sort of when we're not in a time like this. And when mm-hmm. things are, quote, back to normal, as if there is a, right, a back to normal. But a time like this can remind us of the poignancy of every moment.
Oh, absolutely. And to have the structure of the email class and the guided mm-hmm. imageries to work with and to be recording all of this, it's just such a huge gift. Just deeply yeah. grateful. And to be able to talk with you tonight is...
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ramita. Yeah, take good care.
I will.
All right, Gesho.
Gesho.
Thanks for joining us, Ramita. And Jen, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Jen. This is Kate in New York City.
Hey, Kate.
Hi. So good to hear your voices.
You too.
Just calling in and wanted to look at something. Specifically the tendency that I have when I am, I'm told by ego that I have to get all these other things done first before I practice my instrument.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm a guitar player, and, you know, like, ego really sort of, I watch it set up, like, you know, first you got to do X before you can do Y. So mm-hmm. do all this other stuff first before you're kind of allowed to yeah. practice.
Right. I mean, it's nuts when you really look at it, isn't it?
Totally.
But it's so yeah. funny, Kate, because I bet you everyone on the call can plug in their own content to that.
Mm.
And so it's so interesting how easily we get talked into it. Like, you know, we can sit here on open air and look at that and realize that's ludicrous, and yet it really it really can control in a given mm-hmm. day, right? There, this feels really believable.
Yeah. And then even if somehow I manage to, like, put practice first,
mm-hmm.
It's always, like, there in the background kind of nagging me. Like, I'm always aware of the things that I'm not doing or that I said I would do for other people, you know. So it's like very hard to, even if I do manage to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's not yeah. always, you know.
Like, even if you do manage to get to yeah. practicing the guitar, there's mm-hmm. still that back in your mind, kind of a, yeah, but you've got to get to this and don't forget about that. And you said you would do such and such for so-and-so. And
yeah.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I wonder, Kate, as you say that, if that's part of what goes on for us, is mm. we know that's going to happen, right? We know that the voice has the ability to do that to us, to split our attention. So I project mm-hmm. a piece of what goes on for us is you really want the experience of sitting down to play the guitar and being fully with that experience.
Definitely.
Because I guess that's a beautiful experience to not mm-hmm. have to have the attention wholeheartedly on this thing that you love doing, that you're good at, that gives you joy, that's a beautiful experience. So you want to have all of your attention there. So I project that's a piece of how we so easily get talked into. So if I could just get all these other things done, then I'd be allowed to have my attention fully with this experience.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is some version of, like, when I get X done, yeah, then I'll be able, then I won't have to worry about it, so then I can just be right there.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's such a crock, though. It's such a lie. Because there's a never-ending stream.
And that's why, right? I mean, okay,
yeah.
Great. So you did the laundry, and you got that letter sent off, and you did the recommendation for someone who needed the ha-ha. Okay, good. But, I mean, you're still going to have, you know, have you filed your taxes yet? And have
right.
You, I mean, there's right, there's always going to be something else, which is what makes directing attention the masterstroke. Right, it's basically cutting out the middle person. Because the attention, there's endless content that the attention can be split with, that turning the attention to directing attention is the ultimate way of always getting to choose the experience we want.
Yeah, so when I hear you say that, you know, directing the attention is the kind of short circuit to all that.
That's
and
right.
Being able to say, oh, I see, I hear you, ego, telling me that, you know, I got to pay my, I got to organize my taxes and clean off the kitchen counter and write that email. But there's always going to be more of that. So right now I'm going to sit down and practice.
Exactly. And I project the thing that gets us, at least this is true for me, and when I look at it in my own practice, is that what happens is, even though I know that intellectually, when I sit down to play the guitar and I start to get, you know, the attention gets pulled away, I'm not having the experience I want to have. So I'm basically looking to condition mind to decide if I'm having the experience I want to have. And what's the answer? No, I'm not having the experience. See? I mean, this is not working, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what's possible, it feels like, for us is for a period of time, maybe the attention is on, okay, it's not so much that I'm training to be able to sit down and play the guitar. I mean, that is a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the first layer of training is just to sit down and play the guitar and practice directing attention.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So not really looking to see what experience I'm having. Am I in that zone where I'm only, it's just me and the guitar. And there's nothing else. I'm not looking to see if I'm having that experience. I'm not even particularly trying to have that experience. I'm just sitting down to play the guitar as a way of training to sit down and play the guitar when I'm being told I have to go do the laundry and write the thing and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch that experience, and over time, I'm learning to direct it. Nope, I'm not having that conversation. I'm not standing up. I'm not going to get up until whatever it is. You know, I've set the 15-minute timer or the 30-minute timer,
right,
or whatever it is. And the thing that's so great about that is over time, we literally train ourselves. Well, I know it's like being on the cushion. I know I'm going to sit on the cushion for those 30 minutes, so I might as well meditate.
Yeah, right, because, yeah, that's so good. Because that, you know, I know what to do on the cushion when those thoughts come in.
Exactly. Yeah.
Light bulb moment. Yeah, right. So it's the same thing. I'm just not on my cushion. I'm, like, standing in my practice room.
Exactly.
But it's the same thing.
It's guitar playing meditation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so good because that will be applicable to so many areas of your life as you start to master that process.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, it doesn't show up when I'm sitting there doing the taxes. Like, you know, why isn't it pulling me away to play the guitar?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
So sneaky and insidious.
Yeah, it really is. And that's another key part of it, for me anyway, because when we, to really see how sneaky and insidious it is and how much it really doesn't have my best interest at heart, isn't serving me, that to me makes it easier and easier to spot it and to say, no, no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and even to sort of be that which is going to intervene and give Kate the space to have the experience she wants to have in playing the guitar, you know, sort of that mama bear place of, no, you don't get to, Kate's getting to play her guitar right now. You don't get to take her attention away from it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to go back and listen to this one a million times.
I mean, that could be another fun piece of it too, right? To make yourself a recording. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that you listen to either before you do it or when you're in that place of, you know, you want to do it, but I really should do all these other things. You know, just have a one-minute recording that reminds you of why, what you're practicing and what you actually are training for.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's what's fun about it in a way, like about this conversation and being able to see it, is sort of how nested it is, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how to describe it, but it's like you're directing your attention to how you're directing your attention, you know?
Yeah.
And just like you've said, kind of that way in which it all kind of nests inside each other, you know?
Yep.
And
one thing that can be, that realization, what's so great about that is that what that points at is that there's no way to fail at it. Because no matter where you are in the process, you're seeing one of those layers of how it's nested.
Mm-mm.
So it's kind of as long as we pay attention, you know, everything enlightens.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to see it. That's the thing. You know, nothing holds up under scrutiny. That's an even better one there.
Right.
Because essentially, if you keep looking at this and just noticing, you know, noticing when you do sit down and play the guitar, noticing when you don't, noticing what you get pulled off to, noticing what the conversation is, you know, all of it, you'll eventually be free of it.
Totally. Yeah, I get that, and you know, this is I have periods where, you know, it's very easy.
Yep.
And then periods where it's not.
Yeah.
And I suspect nothing holds up under scrutiny, that the periods when it's not, you know, are the periods where I'm you know, working too, like where there's too much work in my schedule, so there's not enough downtime, you know, there's not enough recording and listening. I mean, my sitting practice is very steady, so it's, you know, but maybe that's when I need to support myself and do more sitting, you know what I mean? Like, the closer I look, the more I can probably see, why is this a time when it's harder, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and maybe one of the master strokes there is, okay, it's harder right now.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right?
It's harder. See, right.
Sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's harder.
Right. This is one of the times when it's harder.
This is one of the times when it's harder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to kind of bring that, you know, that lightness and that interest and that curiosity. Oh, look at that. Who knew?
Mm-hmm.
It's harder. Oh, yep, there it is. Sure is.
Yeah, well, you bring up a great point there about the sort of lightness and the curiosity of the, you know, because that's the other part of it. If I can look at it that way and be like, it's harder. And not get a beating for it, you know?
Exactly.
Like,
not
you can just
layer onto it.
Mm-hmm, right. Because if it doesn't have that layer of, you know, shame or failing, like I'm failing, you know, or like I'm this sort of anxiety, like I'm not going to get where I want to get, that kind of stuff on it, it's just, then it's just whatever. It's just, it's harder now. And then I can do all the things that support me. I can be gentle with myself. And
yes. And you know, it's interesting as you say that, Kate, because one of the interesting things I notice in my own practice is that in those times when it's harder, when I can find that gentleness and that compassion and that kindness and that really not taking that personally, just realizing, you know, just like there's a cloud in the sky, that first of all, it tends to pass more quickly. But also I've noticed that when I move back into the, quote, easier times, it's almost like there's an integration that's happened there. And that the that sort of muscle, so let's use the example of you sitting down to play the guitar, then the ability to really be there when I'm playing the guitar is even stronger than it was the last time I went through an easy time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've had that. I've definitely had that experience.
Almost like there's just something about the, you know, the way we train with things that we just go, as you say, sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's harder, but it always is going deeper and deeper and deeper, which tends to be much easier to see when we're on the easier side than when we're on the hard side, right? On the hard side, it seems like one of the sort of, by definition, it feels like, God, it's always been hard and it always will be hard and I'm not making progress here. And
What's the point?
But it's not true.
It's totally not true. It reminds me of one thing that my guitar teacher, my teacher who's overseeing my guitar learning, he's not a guitar player, he plays another instrument, but he's talking to me about, I was getting just sort of overwhelmed by the amount of things that I'm working on and sort of never feeling like, you know, like always encountering a new problem and quote problem, quote, like listen to my language. But, you know, what appeared to be a problem in my playing. And he's like, no, you know, the way to think about it is not like that. This is the problems aren't like never ending. Like there actually is a finite point. Like you're just, you know, you have to do this one and you have to figure out how to play this passage and make it sound this way and et cetera. And then you'll be, then you'll have that. Then that's like another feather in your cap. And like, that's one less that you have to do. And, you know, him saying that to me really reframed the whole thing for me.
Yes. Yes.
And it's almost, because, it's almost like that, right? I think that's what you're getting at.
Exactly. Because what you're describing there, the word that kept coming up for me was expansion. This is an expansion of your guitar skills. You're at an expansive point. You're integrating a new skill here. Because I was laughing when you were thinking, you know, caught that sort of framing of it as a problem. So if you and I sat down to play guitar, I probably have a few more problems than you would.
Probably.
So these things that are being called problems are your skills deepening and expanding. They're not problems at all. They're new frontiers. So yes, exactly like that in our practice.
And as you said, you just sort of go deeper into it. You take another, if it's a set of nesting dolls, you know, you take one doll off and you get to the one underneath of it. Or if it's an onion, I guess you're peeling the onion.
That's right.
And I appreciate you saying, you know, the not taking it personally, because I think that was a good catch. Because I think it's like, I take it also personally.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah. I mean, that's the guaranteed way to suffer with it, is for ego to take it personally. This is something wrong with me, I need to fix it, and look, I'm not doing a good job fixing it. what happened? I was doing so well, and now I'm not. You know, the comparison mm-hmm. has to be in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, thank you so much. I'm so so grateful.
Thank you.
I will report back.
Please do. It's so fun to have a content thing like that to talk about mm-hmm. practice with, because it just, mm-hmm. I mean, we get into the layers. It's the best way to see what's going on in the process level is to have a content like that to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Be well. Yeah. Gosho.
You too. Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Kate. And Jen, I really appreciated that in depth on training the attention. This is what we're doing. I'm playing the guitar. Yes, I know I need to do the laundry and clean the dishes and send that email. And right now I'm playing the guitar.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It comes down to that every time, doesn't it? But it really is the mastery. I mean, ego does not want us to have mastery of the ascension.
Yeah, so true. So true. And Jen, we're going to go to Good News Update. So let me get your guest on here.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Jen, I'll turn it over to you for Good News Update.
Okay. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Jennifer, who is here to speak with us about her experience of being on retreat in the summer of Sangha last year. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hello. Yeah.
So I know you had a somewhat unique retreat.
Yeah, it might be the world's shortest retreat, possibly. It was just 4 hours, and it was extraordinary.
And say more.
No, the lead-up was extraordinary, too. At first, when you put out the news for last summer of Sangha, I thought, well, obviously I can't go to that because of my health issues. But then I just thought, what the heck, communicate. And I asked if it was okay to come for just 4 hours, and yes, it was. Mm-hmm. And was it okay if I brought my special little bench that I need to use? Yes, that's okay, too. And so I just, and I had no idea. My health thing is really unpredictable. I had no idea if I'd be in any shape. And I just thought, what the heck, I can just, you know, sign up, and I can always cancel if it's not going to work out. And even though I'm not that far away from here, going someplace and staying overnight is kind of a Russian roulette situation, too. And it turned out to have one hilarious disaster after another. And it just, I just kept, you know, I had a chemical sensitivity to the Airbnbs. So I had to sleep in the back of my little Prius in the back seat, and I set off my fire alarm right by the host, and lights kept going on all night because I had a motion sensor out there. And it was, I didn't sleep, but by the end of it, I was just laughing. It's like, what else could happen? But there was this calm, like, doesn't matter what's going to be thrown up here, I'm doing this. It's just this real determination and commitment that I was going to do it. And this was hilarious, nice try world, but I'm still doing it.
Oh my gosh, Jennifer. I mean, there's just all of practice in that, isn't there? First of all, you know practice is happening when hilarious and disaster go in the same sentence.
It was so funny. It's like, what else could happen? This is highly amusing by now. Yeah.
I mean, really, just taking all, I project as you're laying it out, taking all the tools that you've gotten through practice and applying them here, right? So starting with, the assumption, ego tries to slide in there. Of course you're not going to go do that. I mean, you can't do that because of your health. But you catch that. And so then you say, well, okay, don't suffer, communicate. You know, maybe I can. I don't know. But I can ask. So the answer, of course, is yes. Okay, well, how about this piece? Yes. Okay. So then no more excuses. The ego doesn't have any more excuses.
Right.
And tries to throw everything at you, I'm sure. I mean, yeah, but you're going to have to spend the night somewhere. And how's that going to? Well, okay, I'll spend the night somewhere. And that piece of
we don't know. Is the fact that you asked those questions and therefore signed up, did that necessarily mean you were going to go on the retreat? No. But it ended up that it did mean that. And mm-hmm. so you came and you mm-hmm. got to the Airbnb and that didn't work so great. So you went in your car and, okay, didn't sleep that much. All right, well, okay, didn't sleep that much. I mean, just every single step of the way, basically, I mean, what we've been talking about all night, you just have the experience you're having and everything that's there, it sounds like there's a clarity that that's okay because mm. that's what I'm here to do, is to mm-hmm. be with whatever is.
Yes. And, you know, I felt not well enough also that it's like the only thing to do is to be right mm-hmm. here with myself. I am like yeah. in the fire and that's all I can do.
Yeah. Well, that is the potential gift of that, isn't it?
Yes.
Where the stakes are high enough that if I don't want to be absolutely, utterly miserable, I'm going to need to be right here, razor's yep. edge. This moment.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And then when I came onto the property, it was this very soothing feel. Oh, ego kept it. Well, what if this and what if that, you know, what if you can't do this and you get there and this happens and all these things happen. And I just kept saying, these are very kind people. I'm sure it will be fine. And that's what I just kept saying. These people are kind. It'll be fine. And I believed it because that was from the mentor. And so I just said, everything's fine. I am going to be fine. It's all fine. And then, and a full belief in that. And I had quite a grand experience while I was there, just being fully present, being welcomed, mm. you know, feeling the kindness. And and getting into bowing, this is not something I ever would have predicted, because bowing is just really not something I've ever been comfortable with. But now I'm a big fan.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Lovely.
And I'm right with you. It's just that sort of ceremony of it that ego can. Oh, I mean, come on, really? I mean, what? But is there, and in the privileged environment, in the environment of practice, around other practitioners, where, I mean, truly that the palpable sense of being with people, but with people in silence, it's like you want to really start to everything and everyone.
Yes, and after 20 years of being a virtual adjunct here, 20 plus years, you know, to be there even just for 4 hours and to experience the relief to not have to be social and have custody of the attention and the eyes. Oh, that was an all-time favorite as well. That and bowing. Yeah. Oh, the best.
Boy, you can take us right to that experience. Yeah.
Like, now I know what we're talking. I mean, I've heard it, all the words. And I've practiced it, you know, to the extent that I could hear. But just to have all the other people there doing that, just, it's like stepping into a warm bath.
And, you know, Jennifer, it's so clear. So, you know, that beautiful description of the lead up to it and all the practice tools that were brought to bear to, you know, allow it to happen. And, you know, and that wasn't necessarily going to mean it happened, but it did happen. And that it allowed you to actually get to the property and have that experience. And the only reason that all happened is it was facilitated by your practice.
Yes. Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah. It was amazing. Bringing practice to practice and being surrounded by practice was just a gift. And 4 hours was plenty to get that gift. I mean, not that I wouldn't want to spend more time, but, you know, in 4 hours, and I had guidance with Sherry that I just, when we were having it, I just thought, well, we're just having, like, we're just shooting the breeze here. It's just a little conversation, just, like, very casual, and I have been picking fruit from that guidance ever since it comes.
Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Truly. I mean, that whatever it is, 10, 15 minutes sitting down with the guy, it gets reported. And amen to that. I bet anyone who's had a guidance appointment can relate to that. That the listening to it again and again and again, and the things that drop in when you're off doing whatever, ooh, that's like a banging from the,
And I attended, we had a work, you know, a workshop, and then I did, I went around to the little signs and did those little practices. There was so much there in just 4 hours.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
You know, it, there's that beautiful quote of the person who realizes their inherent enlightenment in the morning doesn't mind dying in the afternoon. But I just, you know, I just get that sense as you're talking of there's no time to it. You know, when we're fully here taking in, and in some ways, you know, having something so precious like that, you know, after decades of practicing and getting to be there physically and knowing that it's not going to be a long time, I project that's one of those, okay, I really want to be here for it.
It was.
Well, it sounds like something worth repeating.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I'm planning on trying to do 2 4-hour sections this time.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, actually, I have one other piece before I let you go, Jennifer, which is that kindness that you were talking about, you know, so the voice of, oh, God, what if this happens? What if that happens? And completely trusting the kindness of practice. So knowing I'm going to spend time at a place where, you know, kindness is the whole thing, which is absolutely true, and seeing the power of that we're all learning to have that be our internal experience such that no matter what happens, right? So you come, you're going to come, and you're going to stay wherever you stay and have whatever experience you have. It's all met with that capital K kindness, which is us.
Yeah. Yes, definitely projecting that kindness.
Yeah.
And, you know, finding that kindness for my, you know, that compassion for myself throughout the whole experience. Yeah.
I mean, clearly, if you can call it a, you know, a hilarious disaster, then clearly there was that mentoring presence with you the entire way. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us today to talk about it, Jennifer.
Well, thank you. That was fabulous.
It was. Yeah. All right. Good night.
Right.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Jennifer. And, Jen, I'm going to restrain myself because there is not enough time left in the show to repeat all of the gems that were included in that conversation.
I know. I project, Michael, we could both say amen to all of those Summer of Sangha gems.
Yes, amen. And I'm going to bring on our next caller here.
Okay, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Jen, this is Ota. Hi.
Hey, Ota.
There is something strange happening to me, and I'm not sure how to explain it, but I was trying to explain it via email, but I'm not able, you know, and it's so unusual for me because I lived all my life, all my practice life, just kind of knowing the narrative of what was happening to me, you know, and now I have no idea, you know.
Say more.
Well, the thing that I'm experiencing, I'm not even able to express it in practice terms, like using ego, mentor. I can just explain it like as somebody who doesn't know this language, you know. So
go for it.
The way it feels is, you know, we always say that it's not possible to wake up one morning with a different karma. You know, say that. Mm-hmm. Well, I woke up one morning with a different karma.
Wow.
Well, I'm using plastic terms, but so all the stuff that has been bothering me forever, for some reason, seem to be to have subsided.
Wow.
But I'm sure, like, but now I don't want to say anything that is a lie in this call. So my instinct would be, but I'm sure it will be back, because this is how I learned that things work. But I cannot even say that from where I am now, I am sure it will be back. I really don't know what is happening. Does it make sense? You're breaking out. Hold on. Can you repeat it? I'm so sorry. I couldn't hear you.
Hello? Yeah, so I was just going to share with you so far. So you wake up one morning and all those things that normally bother you or make, you know, feel like they're the karma that you walk around with have subsided. They're just not there. And from your experience, you sense that, you know, they'll probably come back around again, but you're not sure they'll come back around because they really aren't there right now.
Not even, because the person who would have said, I'm sure they will be back, is a person, who thinks she knows how life works. B is a person who really, really wants to please you. Not you know, but
right.
I so want to be in line with the practice talk that I want to say, don't worry, I'm just going to a phase, but I'm going back with the old conditioning and everything. Here I come back, you know. But I really want to experiment with being sincere and to really be aware of what's happening without being a people pleaser for my relief, you know. Does it make sense?
Yeah. So now your experience is that the familiar karma has subsided. That's your experience right now.
Exactly. It's so strange.
And are you saying, Isota, so when you said the thing about we don't usually wake up with someone else's karma, are you saying that with all these things that normally would be your karma have subsided, that there are other things that have come up or
they
not?
They still haven't. I'm like, dazed. To make an example now.
Yes, please.
For example, a big karma of mine was wanting approval, being liked, and also a little bit being the teacher's pet, just to protect myself. Not the teacher pet, but wanting to please people who I think love me or appreciate me, just to make sure to be loved, no?
Yep.
It was so strong for me.
Yep.
Or being brilliant, being funny, minimizing things. A lot of stuff that I'm sure have come out in all these years that you have known me. You, I guess you noticed some patterns in my behavior. I don't want to do that anymore, but the interesting thing is that I don't feel the urge to do that. Instead, I feel the urge not to do that. I feel the urge to experiment, to not only experiment, to live through a different behavior.
Yeah. And so, are you being told that this is a problem?
I'm not being told that this is a problem. I'm just calling because my relationship with pattern, with practice is so important that I want to make sure to express my gratitude and to let everybody know that I'm safe and what is happening to me. But I'm not being, I think, well, to go back to using practice language, I guess conditioning is so dazed that doesn't know what to say. But even saying that, this that I just say, mm-hmm. is a little bit lying, you know, because I'm not sure of anything. I'm just, I'm just experimenting with behaving in this way that has opened up for me that wasn't open before, because like recalibrating my behavior according to these new things.
So it sounds like, if I'm tracking you, so realizing, and you have realized it over time, you've seen these various things that happen for you, really feeling like you want approval, or you kind of got to make sure that for the people who love you or care about you, that for this extra assurance, you need to make sure that they approve of you. So maybe you'll do things to make sure that you'll get that approval, that you'll be loved, those sorts of things. And so you wake up one morning and there's some distance from that. Not only do you not feel like you need to do those things, but you're really wanting to experiment with actively not doing those things.
Exactly.
And there's the ability to practice with that, to try that out, to see what that's
exactly.
like.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. I cannot even say to practice with that, because yeah. to say to practice with that would be using something that is not exactly what is happening now, you know?
Uh-huh.
If I were telling you that I'm practicing with that, I would be using a very, very, very broad definition of practice, which is probably right, but I'm not yeah. recording and listening. I'm not doing anything of the classical stuff that I was uh-huh. doing for practice, apart from being aware, which is, I guess, important, you know? But
yeah, we could say the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And is it a sense? I'm just curious. So you're not recording and listening with it, not doing sort of any of the traditional things. And you said a minute ago, I'm just calling in to say that I'm grateful and that I'm okay and that I'm, you know, out here doing my thing. Is it a sense that it doesn't occur to you to record and listen, or, you know, I don't want to record and listen right now, or I'm going to experiment not recording and listening? How does that go?
To be honest, I never had any issue with recording and listening, because I was always so conflicted and fighting a anxious thought in my mind that it was just an immense relief to record and listening, you know, to record and listen.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm having dialogues with myself that are interesting. It has never happened to me.
You're having dialogues with yourself that are interesting?
And interesting and pleasant. So uh-huh. I don't have this, oh my God, I had to record and listen because otherwise my brain is going to explode. Or, I have to listen to a recording saying that I'm loved for 2 hours because otherwise I don't feel loved.
And have you ever used recording and listening in the way that you're describing? So you're saying you're now having dialogues with yourself, that's the way you're describing it, that you really, did you use the word enjoy?
Yes.
Have you ever used recording and listening that way?
Yes, but it always came out of my heart, you know, like, oh my God, I want to record and listen, you know. It was very rare that I recorded and listened because I had to, you know, even if it was a beautiful moment. Let's say I was walking in the street and I was noticing beautiful flowers. Mm-hmm. I felt the noticing of the beautiful flowers would be enhanced by talking to it, to the recorder, you know. And I uh-huh. could deeply separate the mentor as if somebody I talked to, and ego as something, whatever, that talked to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't feel that urge. I don't know. I'm really having the time of my life in this period. Maybe, who knows, I could tell you, I'm sure that then things will get bad, and oh my God, I will be back to recording and listening, and probably that's what's going to happen. But if I were to tell you, now I'm sure of that, I would be lying. It's like, in the metaphor that one is walking through to the mountain to go to the temple, and one gets distracted on the way to the top of the mountain and keeps exploring stuff on the trail instead of going up, you know?
Right.
It is as if the stuff I'm exploring on the trail are taking so much of my attention, and the exploration seems so clear, then who knows, I'm really, really, really enjoying it every day, all day long. That's so strange. It feels so strange saying that, but I don't want to say anything that it's a lie, you know?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the amazing thing about all of it, this is what drew me to this tradition of practice. You know, I think Buddhism is known for this, and this is my experience of this practice. There's nothing moral in it, right? There's no right, there's no wrong, it's way more of a science than it is, you know, a moral code.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So you're having the experience you're having, and you're really enjoying it. And the thing you can know is you'll see whatever you see from it, and it will go however it goes. And then
exactly.
You know what I'm – so I was going to say you'll be practicing with that. But what I hear that part of what you're seeing, I don't even know what verb to use there, but part of the way you're describing it is that it doesn't feel like practice because it's not formal practice in the way that you're used to doing it. You're not recording and listening. You know, you're not – I don't know if you're sitting, but, you know, so it's not your usual practice. It's a different experience. And, you know, one of the things that, to me, this is just one thing that occurs to me, so you can play with it or not and, you know, just see what you see about it. But so it would be fascinating to record, I would project, in the situation you're in, because it sounds like there's some level of conversation. I don't know how exactly it would sound to you, but sort of like I don't really want to right now. I mean, I'm having a really good time, and it doesn't feel like I need to, or I particularly want to, or I don't want to, whatever that is. So to me, that would be a fascinating experiment and reason to do it, to just turn on the recorder and say some of those things and just see what occurs to you in that process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yes. Uh-huh. I cannot even tell you. I'm trying to imagine how it feels, because I would really need to take the record and see how it feels.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, I think that's really one of the things that why when Sherry first introduced recording and listening, and why she's been so enthusiastic about it for so many years, because this is certainly my experience. I was just having an experience with the email class, you know, that asked a particular question, the email class, and there's this sense of like, yeah, I have a sense of that. Yeah, I think I have a sense of it. But, you know, the assignment is to record about it. So I record about it, and I see something completely different than what I assumed was there to see about it. So I just think this could be an amazing place to use recording and listening.
Yes, you know, I think what blocks me, but I think it can be overcome, is that I am feeling so, so well with myself.
Yep.
That I have to find a different voice, but I probably will, because the way I was talking to the mentor was, even in the super beautiful moments, it was putting the mentor above, like, oh, mentor, from me being beyond, listen to this, you know? And this mm-hmm. was my attitude towards the world, I think. Being like funny and I don't know, there were some protective mechanisms that I was using to survive. I don't know how that even towards the mentor or toward practice yeah. was always me looking from a little bit behind, underneath. Yeah. And so yeah. I guess I associate recording and listening to that. And so I will have to see when I experiment with it how to recalibrate. It is as if I'm recalibrating all yeah. my interaction from this new viewpoint, yeah. which is more of a peer viewpoint, you know?
A more of a what viewpoint?
Peer, being a peer, of other
peer,
beings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it takes me right back to the conversation we had with Kate. I project what you're describing as you're at an expansion point. You're at the edge of something new here. And so there's a, I don't know if this is exactly, you'll have to record and see, but almost like, sounds like there's a subtle belief that practice, recording, listening has this sort of, you know, hierarchy or something in it. I'm sure you know intellectually that that's not the case, but that's been your experience of it.
Exactly.
And so mm-hmm. to bring this fear approach mm-hmm. to it. I'm losing the words here, Sota, but I'm just excited for you because I think it's going to be really fun to walk mm-hmm. into the process consciously, to allow yourself to have that peer approach, not need to let go of that, but to expand into that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. Because it's not only practice. Do you remember yeah. how scared I was of my customers or what I conflict the relationship? Right. Now they feel like peer. They feel like peer. My parents feel like peer. Men, I was terrified of men. They feel like peer. It's so strange, you know?
Yeah. Well, or, I mean, strange or, I mean, fabulous, right? There's some fear falling away.
Yeah, uh-huh. Now, I'm afraid of saying fabulous, but yeah. yeah, but that was my record.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's so fun. So we could talk for another half hour, but we're at the top of the hour. So
yeah, I saw.
What I hope is that you'll really lean into exploring it and, you know, consciously, and call back in and tell us what you're seeing.
I will. Thank you so much. Deep Gasho.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Gasho. Care.
Thanks for joining us, Sota. And Jen, I will restrain myself once again after another fabulous conversation. And I want to thank you and everyone for a great show tonight.
Excellent. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Go happy.
Go happy.